Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. It has been particularly hot and sunny in London, England this week. And I was just thinking about if you're having an anniversary at the moment and everyone keeps going, oh, it's so lovely, it's so warm. I hope you're okay. Because sometimes when the spring comes around, it can be a bit tough if it's the first one and all the flowers are coming out and it's getting warmer and they're not there. So I'm just saying I'm thinking of you. It doesn't make it any easier, or hopefully it doesn't make it any worse. But I am thinking of you. And I hope if you're having a good day that you celebrate that too. I read a quote on Instagram recently about celebrating the good ones. And if you are an anxious person or if you've lost someone, it can be hard sometimes to be like, oh, I'm actually feeling okay at the moment. So if you are feeling okay at the moment, celebrate it. Buy yourself flowers. Enjoy it. Because don't worry, you will probably have a bad day again. So let's try and celebrate the moments where we're not feeling too sad and not feeling too upset with what's happening to us. Thank you so much for your amazing comments on the show so far and the new series. It's been just wonderful, hugely appreciated. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast to join the conversations, guys. It's been, yeah, just wonderful. So thank you very, very much for all the comments we've had on the episodes so far, and particularly on Poona's last week about mental health. I know it was a tough episode. A lot of people said that, but I really appreciated you listening to it and sharing it as well, because obviously that's how this podcast continues. So if you have been enjoying it and you want to leave a review, that is obviously hugely appreciated. But if you've just been enjoying it, you just want to tell someone, that's massively appreciated. Basically, I appreciate you as listeners. Thank you. That's what I'm trying to say really awkwardly. Thank you guys for listening. This week's guest is actor and writer Mark O'Sullivan. Mark is part of the Channel 4 comedy series Lee and Dean, where he plays Dean, which is the one with hair, if that helps. If you haven't seen Lee and Dean already, I can't recommend it enough. It is incredibly funny, and it is available online as well. And it's a very strange and brilliant and beautiful thing, and not what you expect from when you first start watching it. And it's absolutely amazing. Mark came in to talk to me about his parents. He lost his dad when he was 15 and his mum when he was 20. Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with actor and writer Mark O'Sullivan.
Hello.
Hello. God. I do the worst intros. They're always so awkward. You'll recognise Mark if you saw his face. I don't know if you recognise his name instantly. You would do. Oh, no, you might not, because you do look actually quite different.
Thank you.
From the very successful Channel 4 series, Lee and Dean, which, of course, you play Dean. And you don't look great as Dean.
Some people think I look really nice as Dean.
Who is that?
Someone on Twitter who doesn't have a real name said I look lush.
Lush?
Yeah.
Mm-mm. How many? Did they have like 3 followers?
No, they had no followers. but I suspect they follow people in every sense.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because the looking is quite extreme. And actually, when I'm in series 2 of Lee and Dean. And when I had to go for the audition, I didn't know who you were. I was like, who's that guy? And then when you started talking, I was like, oh my God, that's Dean. Like, you look so different.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah, that's good though, isn't it?
It's great because Miles, who plays Lee, you know, he just looks like Lee.
He looks exactly like Lee.
He's just a bald man.
Yeah.
Which
makes it tricky is when you first meet him, you're expecting like Lee. And then he's very nice and lovely and kind and intelligent. And there's a little part of you that's like, but where's the scary man?
He's there.
He's there.
He's there.
Yeah, it's not acting.
Lying just below the surface.
But you do look very different.
Oh, thank you.
That's good.
I like it when people say that.
Yeah. How did Lee and Dean come about? Because it's like an unusual story, I think. Maybe you don't think that. Compared to like, we wrote a script. It's like...
Well, and we sort of didn't really, because it's improvised, as you know.
As I know.
As you know from coming and improvising. How did it come about? Miles and I have always done lots of different characters.
Yeah.
And Lee and Dean, bizarrely, started out as two Namibian canoe instructors called Dieter and Patch.
I'm glad that changed.
Yeah, that fell by the wayside some time ago. And their thing always was that they were really blokey blokes.
Yeah.
I don't know how many Namibian men you've met.
Not many.
Not many.
No.
Go on, name one.
I can't.
No, well, there you go. I don't know why I made you do that. But the Namibian men I've met, and I've met a few, have all been very kind of masculine and macho. Right. And so Dieter and Patch were like that. And they would fight constantly. Right. And it started as a play fight and then become a real fight. And then they'd just kick the shit out of each other and then they'd make love. And that was sort of the origins of Lee and Dean. Two blokes who couldn't
quite say I love you.
Yeah, and didn't really understand the feelings.
Yeah.
And then they were two men who worked in a factory on line 4, whatever that means. And then they were builders.
And then they were builders. Yeah. And then, so you were filming stuff and putting it on YouTube?
That's it, yeah.
And then what, like, so did like Channel 4 ring you and go, we've seen your YouTube video?
They sort of did, actually.
No, yeah. That literally happened.
It kind of, via Twitter, someone, Simon Blackwell.
I love Simon Blackwell. Yeah, amazing writer.
He started watching our stuff and saying, oh, you should watch this to people. Yeah, we got called into Channel 4, did a few things, and then Lee and Dean came about.
Wow.
I know.
I literally thought that was not going to be the story.
Well, I say it like it happened in 2 minutes.
Yeah,
it took sort of 6 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was quite an exciting 6 years.
Yeah. And so the first series came out. And if you haven't seen it, it's amazing. I think it's still on 4OD, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. All 4 it's called.
All 4. I know. I keep saying. And I type it into my computer.
Everyone calls it 4OD.
Doesn't know. Yeah.
Even people at Channel 4, if I'm being really honest.
4OD is a good name.
Yeah.
Why did they change it to All 4?
All 4 sounds a bit like awful.
Yeah, and it doesn't, like, awful, it doesn't, but it's like starting with 4 in your head, like Channel 4, what's their one?
You know where you're headed.
I know I'm heading 4OD. Okay, sorry, All 4. You can watch it, guys, is my point. And it's about these builders set in Letchworth.
Well, Stevenage.
Stevenage, we film in Letchworth, don't we?
We film some of it in it's set in Stevenage.
Set in Stevenage, apologies.
But we're sort of based in Letchworth, so...
I got my Hertfordshire towns wrong there, and I'd like to apologise to Letchworth.
and you're native.
I know, I am native of Hertfordshire, and it's areas. So yeah, I was quite excited to visit Letchworth again. Excellent vinyl shop, guys. Did you go to the vinyl shop where you're filming?
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, you told me that you once had a bad experience in Hitchin, where I live.
Why are you bringing it up?
Sorry. I didn't realise it was a secret.
I snogged a boy somewhere. I can't remember where we met. We met like a gang of boys and I was in the gang of girls, and then we agreed to meet them in Hitchin like the next day, and I was at a party, yeah. And then the boy that I had snogged, we turned up and it was like, well, you know, that's Carrie's boy. But then this is actually making me feel very sad. He then very like sort of just ignored me and that really like, not you.
That's
now
I've seen
you in daylight. Yeah, he was a mean Hitchin boy. But it was It was good in a way because it was humiliating. But I remember talking to him and thinking, oh, you're an idiot. Why was I hoping that this would work? So even at like 16, I was like, you're an idiot.
Have I restored your faith in people from Hitchin?
No.
No, not at all. I love the image of you in a gang.
Yeah, I say gang. I mean, you know, a bunch of middle class ladies.
Collective.
Yeah, more of a unit. A union. Yeah, we are Hertfordshire friends. Not many people are Hertfordshire friends, to be fair, who work in this business.
No, despite its proximity to the town.
Lots of people live in Hertfordshire and work in London, but I don't think it's a very creative place. Sorry, I'm from there, so I feel like I can say that.
No, I think Hitchin and Letchworth, where we're based, do feel quite sort of vibrant. And
yeah, no, you're right. Yeah. I was surprised, actually, because you have, on the show, you have loads of people, your mates.
Yeah, just from Hitchin.
From Hitchin, who, when you speak to them, like, oh, I'm a filmmaker and I'm an illustrator and I'm a... Oh, what's it, the guy? What's his job? The neuroscientist?
Oh, yeah, he plays Corinne.
Yeah.
He's an astrophysicist.
An astrophysicist. I knew Dr. it was a clever
Stewart.
One.
Yeah.
And he just works in the office with you.
And then puts women's clothes on and appears in several episodes of Lee and Dean.
I mean, he is a very nice person because you really just make him dress in flimsy women's clothes in the background of shots.
Yeah.
He doesn't complain.
He loves it.
He loves it.
He absolutely loves it.
An actor would not love that. They would complain a lot.
No, that's why we don't work with actors.
Yeah, no, you've done very well. And why you work with me. anyway, so there's been incredible success, but obviously that's not why we're here today. So who are we remembering today, Mark?
Well, now, I didn't talk to you about this before.
No, I know.
Because I don't know if it's appropriate or even allowed to talk about two people.
No, that's very much allowed, yeah.
That's good because...
You're totally allowed.
If I left one of them out, I'd feel really bad.
That's fine, don't worry. No, you're not alone in having more than one to talk about.
That's good. Yeah. I'm pleased to hear that.
Yeah.
So we're here to talk about my mum and dad.
And who was it who died first?
So my dad died first when I was 15.
Are you 15?
And you were 15, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah,
yeah. Your dad died in 1992.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then my mum died in 1997.
So. Oh, so how old were you when your mum died?
I just turned 20.
Oh.
I was about 2 weeks into being 20.
I'm doing the covering face that I do because, yeah, my dad died when I was 15. And so having to then lose your mum when you're 20.
Yeah.
That's a kick in the nuts, isn't it?
It's shit, isn't it?
That is so shit.
It's really dreadful.
Oh, God. So what happened with your dad? How did he die?
So completely out of the blue.
Mm.
He wasn't ill or anything. You know, he was much older than my mum. He was about kind of 15 years older than my mum. So he was, what was he, late 40s when I was born? And I'm the youngest of four.
Wow.
So... Yeah, he was always the older dad.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, there was never any sign of him being ill. He always seemed to be in perfect health. Yeah, he was very active. He was very sociable.
Mm.
Yeah, I didn't have any clue at all.
Were you close to him?
Yeah, yeah, really, really close. In lots of ways, you know, I don't, because there isn't much... It's difficult to trace where the kind of things I do and I'm into sort of come from in my family. But I think if they're from anywhere, it's probably my dad's side. So he was from Southwest Ireland, Kerry, and he moved over to England in the 60s, I think. And whenever I've been over to the village he's from, there's always kind of stories of storytellers in our family, you know, and people who... kind of have that sort of tradition. And I remember going over there when I was quite young and people saying, oh, he's just like Uncle Tim, isn't he? I don't know anything about Uncle Tim. Uncle Tim could have been a mass murderer. He's just like Uncle Tim.
He's just like, you know, the psychopath Uncle Tim. Yeah.
Murder strangers at bus stops. So I was close to him, really close to him. And he, like I say, he just died completely out of the blue. I say that about a week before he died, apparently he'd complained that he had a pain in his leg.
Right.
But, you know, I have pains in my legs.
Yeah,
and, you know, I don't kind of worry about them too much. And then he went to work one morning in July and I was in old money, year 10. Mm. No, that's new money, isn't it? Year
fourth
10.
Year.
Fourth year.
Fourth
well
year.
Done for doing the conversion.
I was in the change, so I know both.
Uh-uh.
I was during the
skills.
Change. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I went to school and it was a really hot July day and it was about lunchtime and I'm sitting in a French lesson looking out, we had this classroom right next to the field, and it just looked glorious out there. And the last place you want to be is in a French lesson, unless you really enjoy French lessons in the sun. And I saw from across from the other building, I saw one of the sort of deputy heads walking across, and this was a man to be scared of. Yeah, you know, people weren't, you didn't go out of your way to talk to him because he was terrifying. And he came into our class and went up to the teacher, and I sort of just overheard kind of, is Mark O'Sullivan in here? And my teacher kind of pointed at me and he said, can you come with me, Mark? And I thought, Jesus, you know, what have I done?
Yeah, shit.
I've been caught smoking because I was smoking at the time. I was, you know, in the loos, obviously.
Always caught smoking, yeah, same.
And our school was really sort of spread out. The buildings were really spread out. And so I'm walking across from the block I'd been into the main block with him. And I remember saying to him, you know, kind of, what's going on? What have I done? And he looked at me and he looked really tense and said, your dad's not very well. There's someone here to take you to the hospital. And, you know, from that moment in my mind, like flicking a switch, I'm kind of there in Technicolor.
Yeah,
you know, I can sort of feel it and see it and hear it.
So you were just walking along when he said that?
Just walking along. No, you know, because there were no warning signs at all.
Yeah, you're just a teenager with the biggest worry is like, what am I going to do at the weekend? Like,
yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, nothing more to think about than that. And have I got enough cigarettes to get me through the rest of the school day? And we got to the main office and there was a family friend there. And she was a nurse and she was very kind of no-nonsense. And she'd always been very no-nonsense, but she was very quiet driving me to the hospital.
Oh, God.
Which was kind of my first indication that maybe there's something bad here. And she said he'd collapsed at work. He was a painter and decorator for the council.
Wow.
And so he would just be in like empty bungalows or flats painting. Yeah. And apparently, he obviously kind of felt ill, pulled one of those emergency cords that they have, you know, for old people.
Yeah,
you need to
get
the warden. And the warden had arrived and he sort of collapsed on the floor. Anyway, I got to the hospital, all of my family were there, and he just died about 2-3 minutes before I arrived there. And,
My God.
Yeah, it's... It's such an odd moment, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, the way I found out my mum had died was really odd and bizarre, and very, very different to that. But
that's so hard to be 15 and just walk into that, though. Like, that's...
Isn't it? And just have all these eyes on you and think, oh, how on earth do I react now?
Yeah, because you can understand, I don't know if you have this, having, you know, lost my dad at 15, you can understand as an adult why they're looking at you like that. Now I'm older, I think, oh, they must be, oh, they just feel for you.
I feel desperately
just feel
sorry,
so sorry.
For
But
you.
When you're 15, you're like, what do I do with that?
Yeah.
Like, what should I do with all your emotion? Go
Thanks
away.
A lot.
Yeah, you're just like, okay. And so you just walk into that, so your brothers and sisters were there?
Yeah, they were all there, the whole family and like loads of family. We had a big sort of extended sort of group of friends and they're all very close. And my mum worked at the hospital. She was a nurse there, you know, so there were people who were walking past who saw my family and went in. So it's this just room full of people, friends and family.
And what happened? Had he had a heart attack?
He had an aneurysm.
Aneurysm. So
a blood clot had gone up to his heart and kind of stopped his heart. And just gone pretty much. I think the first thing I said was, has anyone got a cigarette? And went outside and smoked.
Yeah.
And then I remember I was the first one to go home to the family home for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
Walking in there and just, you know, like the world had changed colour a little bit, you know.
And what was it like? Did you have the funeral very quickly? Did you go to the funeral?
Yeah, no, I did, absolutely. It was a couple of weeks after, I think. It took a while to... Because he'd sort of died at work. There had to be, not an inquest, but...
Coroners, all
of that stuff. So it took a good couple of weeks. And, you know, being Irish Catholics, they like to bury you, you know, within an hour, usually.
Yeah,
That didn't sit well with the family, but it allowed some of the Irish contingent to get over. Yeah, no, I was really involved with all of it. I was raised a Catholic and we were very sort of devout. And I was up until I was, you know, sort of late teens. I don't think I did a reading at his funeral, but I did carry the coffin.
You did?
Yeah, that was... I was thinking, obviously, kind of ahead of coming to do this today, you know, what do I remember from then? And one of the really, this is my mind just jumping around here now. One of the things that I think sort of happened for me when my dad died was that sort of two things running alongside each other. One was that I felt like I'd become a grown-up in that moment there.
Instantly, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A switch being flicked again. Because I remember going, after I got home that day, then I had to go around and tell some friends of the family around the corner.
Oh, my God.
And this old Irish couple who were lovely, we'd known all our lives.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound really odd. I remember telling Jim, the guy, and putting my hand on his shoulder as I told him. And I remember thinking, that's really odd. I don't think I've ever put my hand on someone's shoulder before, but I suddenly feel...
You like know, don't you?
I'm
like,
a bit
know.
Sort of grown up yeah. now. You know, I've grown in these last 4 hours, I've stopped being a kid. But at the same time, I think it also kind of almost preserved me as a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Because I've never really felt older than that in my mind.
See, I've talked about this a lot on the show, and that's really interesting. Because I think, I hope this isn't odd, I felt like I got on with you quite quickly. I was like, oh, yeah. And I feel 15. I feel, and now you've said that, that's really, because I didn't know the age you were when it happened to you. That's really funny, because it's like, I remind me of like a boy I went to school with. And I feel like there's like, yeah, like we're still year 10, year 11.
Yeah.
And I find it very easy to relate to that age of of person. Like if I see a 15-year-old behaving, I'm like, yeah, I get you. I get you. That makes sense what you're doing. You're not being like, I don't think that's unreasonable. I'm like, yeah, they're being dickheads. Like, I still feel like that. And
but
your
a
sense of humor.
Grown up version.
Yeah, like this kind of like arrested development, isn't it? Like, and your humor is very
childish.
Childish, yeah, but very like, not, there's childish humor, but I think you do have quite a teenage boy streak about you.
Oh, I do, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And actually, that's really interesting because the. Being on set on Ian Dean was like very lovely, but like it was, Bantz was high.
Oh, high Bantz.
High Bantz.
Right, yeah.
And you had to be like on your toes ready for the Bantz that was coming towards you.
And my response to pretty much every question is your mum.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's funny. I feel exactly the same. I feel, it's taken me, I feel like since I had kids, that helped shift me on a bit. That like,
you think?
Yeah, that for me was a big thing. I was like, I can't be this 15-year-old anymore. But if before I had my daughter, it was like to get back there took 2 seconds. Like I just to be able to be shitty teenager was so comfortable, easy, because that's where you. I guess also that's where you were happy. That's, and for me, like that's where they knew they were still alive at that point.
So yeah, a little moment preserved inside you, like a little time capsule.
Yeah, if you can keep that. They're not dead. It's sort of what I think your brain kind of protects you a little bit.
That's interesting. That's I think you're right.
That's what I think I've done. I don't know. I mean, that's real armchair psychology. That's definitely what I have had to accept, that a part of keeping her alive was keeping him alive. So, you know, very stroppy and opinionated Carriad that, you know, had like all these fucking opinions about everything and was, you know, just very sassy was, that was definitely the girl he knew. And the older I got, when I was like, oh, maybe I don't need to enforce my opinion on everybody or be super honest.
No, don't give in to that.
No.
Always
keep
force
it.
Your opinion
Always
on people.
Force your opinion. Yeah. That definitely for me was about like not wanting to let that person go.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to let him go. Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Just, and there's also no harm in staying at 15, is there?
No.
Like,
well, I mean, it's kind of not done us...
It's not done us any harm in our jobs.
No, absolutely.
Definitely. Definitely. Like,
it's helped us immensely. You know,
but that's interesting that we've ended up in those jobs, don't you think? Like, if maybe that hadn't happened to us, other things might have, you know, wouldn't felt the need.
I'd be a chartered surveyor, I reckon.
Yeah, I don't think I think I might still be doing something dicking around, but I don't know. You can't tell, can you?
No.
So were you carrying, who else was carrying the coffin? Was it just family members?
So me and my brother, and then, I don't know, it must have been the undertakers. I don't know why we did it, actually, thinking
it's
about
it. It's very traditional.
Oh, really traditional.
Yeah.
Really, really traditional. You know, I was in an ill-fitting suit from Burton's.
Great.
And, and yeah, it was... Although, actually, non-traditional thing that happened, I did pull at my dad's funeral because some family
Ever
friends...
Ever the 15-year-old,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sad,
yeah,
actually.
Really sad. I probably need to get off with someone.
What happened?
So, some other friends of the family had some cousins from Ireland staying over, and this girl who was, I think she was 16 or 17. Is that bad? I don't know. I was 15.
No, you're 15. That's all right.
Oh, that's okay. That's good. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Well, no, that's awful. I'm making it just because you're a boy. That's fine. I think, was it consensual? Were you okay with it?
Yeah, I was over the moon.
That's probably okay. Great. That's fine.
And I don't remember overplaying the "I'm really sad because my dad's died, please kiss me" card. But I do remember her sort of coming up to me at the wake and saying, "Oh, I'm really sorry about your dad." And going, "Oh, you know, thanks," you know, being a bit of an awkward teenage boy again. And then some friends, because my mum had said, you know, if you want some of your friends to be there, that'd be fine. And that was really nice having them there. And we'd all decided to go to the cinema kind of later on that day.
Yeah.
And so I kind of said, "Oh, a few of us going to the cinema actually after." And she said, "Oh, yeah, I'll come." And then we're just getting off of each other at the back of the cinema. So, you know, I'm not saying it's an ideal pickup. strategy.
No, but why I'm laughing is that if you haven't been through it, what you don't understand is that everything is still the same.
Yeah.
Like nothing else. Yeah. You've had this huge switch inside yourself. Your life has disappeared. Everything's upside down, but your friends are still going to cinema. You still want to pull that. Like there's all this other stuff that's very normal. And so you do it. And there's a bit of you that's like, this is a bit weird. Tiny little void. This is a bit weird. But then you're like, well, I mean, what am I going to do? Not snog her, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's July, so then you've got the summer.
So, yeah, and there were a couple of weeks of school, and I didn't go back to school for those couple of weeks. And I went, and I'd only been over there once with my mum and dad a couple of years before, but I decided to go over to my dad's village and stay with my aunt and uncle for a couple of weeks. And I remember thinking, I'm going to go and find my dad.
Aww.
Kind of thing. But and I kind of got out there with this slightly sort of poetic thing of, I'm going to find him here in the hills and valleys of County Kerry. And I just smoked a lot and got quite pissed.
That's fine.
Which in itself was finding something.
Yeah.
It's
nice that you had that escape hole to kind of just disappear into.
It was, yeah. My uncle is gone now. He was a bit of a shit.
Okay. And he was really great. You know,
so supportive. Yeah, just became like a father figure. He didn't at all. He was just a very horrible, miserable old man who didn't really want me there. I think he'd been taught at a really young age that feelings were evil.
Right.
And tried to avoid them. And I remember saying to him at some point, "You do know my dad's just died."
Oh my God. When you have to spell it out, I mean, you could just be nice. Like, my dad has literally just died. Yeah. That's hilarious.
And I came out here because, you know, I thought it might be nice. And your wife, my aunt, his sister, thought it might be nice. And you're just being a bit of a wanker, aren't you?
What did he say to that?
He probably went out and caught a salmon or something, because that was his way of responding to things.
Don't need feelings, I got my salmon. That's fine.
Oh my God, no, will you get... have you ever heard the Kerry accent?
No, not properly.
Well, and you haven't heard it properly still, because that was awful.
Mine was pretty bad.
I was going to do... did you like the horses, Jenny? I don't know why I'm saying this. That's what someone said to my wife once.
Like the horses.
"Did you enjoy the horses, Jenny?" No.
It's lovely.
Isn't it?
It's very, really nice.
It's lyrical.
God, that's so hard. So then you go back to school. Were you... Yeah, I mean, because so I was in year 11, old money, fifth year when it happened because of my birthday. So I was 15, but I was about to be 16.
Right.
And I had to go and do my GCSEs like 2 weeks later. And then I sort of went into sixth form. So I had this like... There was like a weird change anyway of like lots of people left and people arrived who didn't know what happened. So it felt very different anyway. But must have been really hard to sort of go into the fifth year and have, how did you find it after that?
Well, I've been thinking about my childhood quite a lot recently for a couple of different reasons. One, like having your own kids.
Yeah.
You do, don't you? You kind of look back on your own experience and think, what screwed me up the most of trying to avoid that if possible?
Yeah.
Because you're going to fuck them up in one way or another.
Yeah.
I was an odd kid.
Mm.
I was a really strange child. You know, I wasn't.
I'm not surprised. I get it.
But you don't look surprised. You look relieved, if anything.
I mean, I was a bit odd as well, so I think I can relate.
Oh, what did you do that was odd? Can I ask?
I was just a bit odd. I think I was quite good at... I was quite good at fitting in, because I'm quite good at, like, mimicking, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was very in my head a lot, very in my head. Everything was sort of, sort of away with the fairies, I would say. So I think if you met me, you'd think, oh, yeah, she's fine and normal, but wasn't always
to the professional eye. Yeah, been concerned.
Social
services would have been involved.
But I feel like maybe you were more visibly odd. What did you do?
I reckon I was. Yeah, and it was my way. In fact, being odd was my way of fitting in.
Right.
I think,
yeah.
Because I was shit at sport.
Oh yeah, it's hard for a boy.
But I could make people laugh.
Yeah.
Back then, I remember doing things like. My dad was really into old films, and when we got our first VCR, he would tape every old film because he'd been to see them all when he was growing up.
Yeah.
I think he spent all of his life in the cinema, basically. And I remember getting really, really obsessed by this 1941 film that he loved and watching it over and over again. And I bought a typewriter at a car boot sale and decided to type out the film. And it must have taken me about 7 weekends.
Oh, my God.
7 weekends with the remote control of the VCR, just going backwards and forwards, typing it out. I don't even know why I did it. Why,
My kids do weird. I lived in a box for 6 months. We got a new washing machine and I just crawled into it and I just slept in it, lived in it, and I wouldn't get out.
Washing machine boxes were great, the size of them.
And I just really liked. And my brother was like, so weird, you've got to get her out of it. My mum was like, and eventually.
She's happy enough.
Yeah, she's happy, just leave her. Yeah. But yeah, that sort of odd thing children do. Typing up a script, that's fascinating.
I loved it, but I had many boxes.
Oh, I was obsessed with getting in boxes.
I used to paint the outside of them. And then, that couple I mentioned, Bridget and Jimmy, live around the corner. When I was little, I used to walk around in the box, around the block. So I'm sure my neighbours got used to just seeing. Moving boxes.
Little legs. You sound funny.
Odd. I was odd.
Odd but funny. It's someone with a sense of humour. If I'd seen that child, I'd think, that's funny. But I appreciate annoying people might be like, oh, he's a bit weird. But like a funny person would have gone, what he's doing is funny.
He's burying his skateboard. Two-thirds of it with one-third still sticking out of the earth.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know. Still don't know.
I stole a chair leg that was broken from school. I used to collect things that had broken off bits of school.
Yeah.
I just don't. And I remember my friend Susanna going, why do you want it? And I was like, I found a tube seat. Yeah, bottom half of a tube seat. That was, kept that in my bedroom for ages.
You see how excited I looked? Because if I'd have found a tube seat,
You'd have buried it.
I'd have fought you for it.
I know, no one else wanted it.
Oh, I'd have been in there.
Yeah, I was like, this is so cool. It's half a tube seat.
You could have had it at weekends and I'll have it during the week. Timeshare on an old tube seat.
So you were odd anyway.
So I think
weirder?
Yeah, and I think I kind of used it as a bit of a license to just to fulfil my oddness.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, it's so shit. You sort of gives you this. Yeah. And also, I think you do. I mean, I don't know if you had this. You hit that nothing really matters. I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
So did you just not give a shit what people really felt?
Didn't really give a shit. And I know you've said before, kind of going into GCSEs, I couldn't give a damn.
Oh, I just couldn't care less, yeah.
Which was reflected in my results, actually, quite successfully. You don't, do you? And I mean, having lost your dad when you did,
yeah,
I know that now, whenever friends of mine are losing their parents, I always feel like I should be really good at this point. I should be like the best friend to have.
Yeah.
And actually, I feel just rubbish because my experience is so vastly
so different
to theirs.
Yeah, that's true.
But one of the things I say to people really regularly is, lots of people will tell you what you should be doing, and what you should be feeling, and what is right and what is wrong, and what's acceptable and what's unacceptable. Forget all of that.
Yeah.
It's whatever feels right. The dead person is dead.
Yeah. That's it.
Whatever you do now, you do for you.
Yeah.
And you try to make sure it doesn't negatively impact other people around you who are also affected. But
I think that's really good advice. I think that's very clear good advice of like, just keep an eye that you're not negatively affecting people. But basically,
do what's right for you.
Do what's right,
whatever that is, screaming or laughing or running or drinking or wanking or doing whatever you're... Bearing a skateboard. Mm. Yeah. Although it does render the skateboard unrideable, as I discovered.
Mm, but artistically, it looks amazing.
Oh, it was superb. It was almost an installation.
But yeah, I think that's so important to remember that there is nothing you can really... There's nothing you can do, is there? You can't bring them back. So
no.
Who gives a shit what the fuck you do at that point? Especially as a teenager. And do you have this as well, I think I wish there was a way sometimes of adults who, I mean, there probably is a charity that does this, but like adults like us who lost them as teenagers to speak to teenagers. Because I sometimes hear other adults being like, oh, what the teenagers needs are this.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, you don't know. I feel like when you still feel very connected to that 15-year-old self, you're like, nah, they don't want that. And also when they go, that thing that happens a lot of going, oh, they said they're fine, or like, they're not fine. Yeah. They're just lying through their teeth constantly because they don't know what the fuck's going on.
And this mask is going to fall off at some point.
Oh, it's going to fall off probably about mid-30s.
Yeah, like, and there's going to be some really bad moments.
There's going to be some bad. And maybe that's, I also come to the conclusion, like, maybe that's fine. Maybe you just have to be protected at 15 because you don't really have the vocabulary to deal with it. So the later breakdowns are probably quite useful. Like, I definitely think...
Deferment.
Yeah. And people go, oh, she put it off. Well, I say to myself, I put it off by not dealing with it at 15. But then I think, did I, or was I very sensible and went, I can't really process this now because I'm too young. Let's put it in a cupboard. Let's carry on being a teenager and, you know, hit 24 or whatever and be like, oh, hello, what's this?
When it can burst open.
When it can burst open.
At an inopportune moment.
At a party or while you're having sex. You know, whenever it feels ready to be there.
So what happened with my dad was, because I, when he died, I felt I cried a lot.
Mm.
I did all of the crying.
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously not all of the crying.
I know, you think, don't you?
And then in my
anymore.
Early 20s, I was in a relationship with someone and we were lying in my first flat, kind of rented flat, lying in bed. And I had my dad's old clock radio.
Yeah.
And I'd still had it. And it was knackered.
Yeah,
really
yeah.
knackered. But me and dad used to listen to... you used to be able to hear the Police on FM, like in the
80s. Yeah, yeah.
We used to listen to the Police on Friday nights. That's not odd, is it? I don't know where I got it from. My memories were so fond of listening to that.
Yeah.
And I'm lying in bed with my girlfriend at the time, and it just stopped working.
It died, and it was
about 1 a.m. Yeah. On a Sunday morning. And I just went to pieces.
Yeah.
Absolute pieces.
Yeah.
I was sobbing.
Because the radio died and he's died. So you can't have something else die because what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could all the dying stop, please?
Yeah, can it just stop?
And they'd taken the Police off the FM band years before. That was a blow.
Oh, God. I completely understand when you're just like, no, I've been keeping that alive. Don't you understand? Like, because I can't deal with the fact that they're dead.
Don't look at me. Look away. Look away.
And it's very hard to... Was she okay about it or was she a bit like...
I think she was quite surprised by the force with which my grief, tsunami-like, overtook me. But so was I.
Yeah. That's it because they call it transitional objects, things like that. And often you don't know. You don't know that that's what that is. You don't know until something happens to it and you're like, oh, that was my father. Like... I've talked about it before, like when David Bowie died.
Yeah.
And I just suddenly was like, whoa, I feel very strange. I was like, oh, because in your head you've made him your dad. And so somehow you felt like, it's all right.
See, I did that with Wogan. I'm so, so not over Wogan.
Oh my God, I'm crying. You made Terry Wogan. Of course, the Irish thing. Of course.
Of course I did. I didn't know I had. But
no.
When Terry, I'm welling up now talking about Terry Wogan. Oh, this would be amazing if I do actually start. There are tears behind my eyes.
But I could. Did Terry Wogan look a bit like your dad?
No.
No.
Or sound like him. They were from different parts of Ireland, but was kind of fatherly.
Is that memory? Yeah, I know. Well, David Bowie didn't look like my dad at all, but it was just somebody who was a bit weird that sometimes people didn't. I felt like sometimes people didn't understand what he was doing.
Yeah.
That's how I connected. It's like, oh, that reminds me of my dad. Oh my God, Terry Wogan.
Yeah.
He was very fatherly, wasn't he? Sort of soft and kind, and you can imagine him being nice to you.
Yeah.
Do you think we sort of chose, I think I sort of chose someone who might have been a bit, like slightly more, I don't know, not better version of my dad. That sounds awful, but like...
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Terry Wogan wasn't a patron decorator for the local authority.
But yeah, it's like, it's sort of like fantasy version, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not real, and you don't know, Terry Wogan might have been annoying occasionally, you know.
And I think my memory of my dad is that he was quite erudite. And,
yeah.
You know, he was a good talker.
Yeah, like Terry.
Like Sir Terry.
Sorry.
Please.
Did he die? Was that quite recently?
A couple of years ago. It floored me.
Did it floor you?
Oh, honestly.
No. And you had no idea you'd kind of done that?
No. I always knew, like, when he finished doing his... Oh, this is awful. When he finished doing his Radio 2 breakfast show about 10 years ago, whenever it was, I listened to the final moments of the final episode inside whilst my children played in their very first snow with my wife getting increasingly annoyed, why aren't you out here with the children experiencing this? I'm going, can you just give me 5 minutes? It's all I need. 5 minutes.
Oh, God. You've made me snore. I just know that feeling of being so weird and people being like, you're being so weird. You're like, yes, I know. But you just, it's like, it's slightly addictive personality. It's like, I just need I need it. Like, let me do it. Please don't take this from me, because you've had something taken from you.
I know.
And so you can't deal when things are taken from you, because out of the blue, something got snatched. And so you're so on edge about things being snatched from you.
So between Wogan and the clock radio, I'm in pieces. Oh,
Sorry, I'm laughing. Just because I just realised you were saying you're in pieces. I was like, I am in hysterics. No, I know that feeling.
They're very close, aren't they? Hysterics so and being in pieces.
And that feeling of just being so vulnerable. And it's so hard because it's deferred. I think that's the thing when it happens to you as a teenager. Yeah. You know, when you're in your 20s, I don't know, it's not my experience, but, you know, when you're a bit older, people go, oh, you know, like that. Their dad died a couple of years ago. So, but people are like, what is wrong with this person? You're like, it was so long ago, I can't explain to you why. But yeah, that people leaving and stuff being taken from you and not having control, I find...
Having control taken away from
God,
you.
God, I get so weird about that.
Same.
I find it so like... Because something, that's what happened to us. And we didn't get a warning and we had to process it very, very quickly. And I think, you know... As we say, perhaps you don't process it very well. And things get moved around in your head, you know.
And this is a feeling I come back to quite a lot. This it's another really odd thing, but the oddness didn't kind of stem from me. For some reason, we always went on holiday to Cromer in Norfolk, like every year.
Yeah.
And then one year, when I was about 9, my mum announced one Friday night that me, her and her mum, my grandmother, were going to Mallorca the next morning. Totally out of the blue.
Right.
And no one else was going. My dad wasn't going.
Okay.
None of my siblings were going. And believe me, that was brought up a lot.
Oh, yeah, I bet that was.
Afterwards and indeed since. And we went to Mallorca, had this amazing week. And I remember going up to this kind of little market town in the hills.
Yeah.
And losing my mum and suddenly thinking, I'm in a foreign place.
Yeah,
I don't speak the language.
Shit.
It's hot.
Yeah.
There are hundreds of people around me. I don't know where you are. And that feeling of being alone comes back to me every so often.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 42.
I know.
And sometimes I feel like that little boy lost in a market in a foreign country.
It's that horrible sick feeling, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like sick to your stomach. It's like, oh, I need to, it's so weird. But I guess the thing that's strange is like the fact that we are surprised, I'm surprised that we feel like that. Like, of course, you
know. Of course
we
do. It's part of our wiring, isn't
it? Yeah. But it's such a, we're so wired. Also wired to try and be happy all the time or like not feel these things.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So speaking of your mum...
Yeah, she's dead. Stop. She went as well.
Bastards.
The double.
And we didn't get... What was your dad's name?
Oh, it's John.
John, and what's your mum's name?
Anne.
John and Anne. So what happened with your mum?
So she'd already been getting ill before my dad died.
Oh,
she
wow.
She had this kind of progressive lung disease.
Oh, God.
And she'd been in and out of hospital a few times, kind of whilst my dad was still alive. But then she seemed to be sort of okay.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, about 6 months, a year after, no, in fact, less than 6 months after my dad died, it came back kind of with a vengeance. Mm. And she was kind of in hospital a lot of that time.
Wow.
Between dad dying and when she died. So like the first Christmas without dad, she was in hospital.
God, you must have felt so vulnerable.
It was pretty horrible.
Yeah. And obviously she must have been struggling with
her
grief.
I didn't realise at the time. I've only come to appreciate kind of more recently how broken she was.
Yeah.
After how devoted they were to each other. So, now, you know, when I think about all of my friends whose parents kind of split up. Having problems. My memories of my mum and dad being together, and they may be slightly rose-tinted.
Yeah, yeah.
But they just seem so happy.
Yeah.
So devoted to each other. I mean, there were the times when they would have an argument and they would then use the medium of us, the children, to speak to each other. And my mum would come into the room and say, would you tell your father his tea's ready? And he would be sitting there. And before you'd had a chance to tell him, he would say, would you tell your mother? If none of it's been relayed yet.
Yeah.
I'll be there in 2 minutes. Well, will you tell your father that if he's not there in 2 minutes, he's going in the bin? But that was so rare. For that to happen. She had this horrible, I can't even remember what it was called, but it was just like her lungs didn't work properly and she was on a waiting list for a lung transplant.
Wow.
When she died, and she'd kind of been back and forward to Harefield Hospital,
yeah.
You know, and they were waiting for an organ. And stupidly, I didn't realise how bad it was. Stupidly?
That's probably not fair, yeah. Perhaps,
probably not
yeah.
fair. I'm probably being unfair to myself. But because I didn't really ever go away.
Mm.
I didn't sort of go on holiday away.
Yeah.
I didn't stay at other people's houses. I always stayed at home, apart from when she was in hospital, when I'd maybe kind of stay with friends sometimes. I would always be at home. Mm. I'm not saying, I wasn't her carer, but I was there an awful lot of the time. I didn't like to leave her.
And like youngest... Or four, you stick around, like the youngest
often. Yeah, the others were all off, you know, they had families and things. And when she died, she'd been taken into intensive care about 2-3 months before. This is just before Christmas as well, and like put on life support. So we had her last Christmas, she was on a ventilator
in a
room. And then she seemed to pick up and get better. And it just happened to coincide with a really good friend of mine's birthday, and they invited me away to this thing in Huntingdon, of all places.
Of all places, yeah. Not even that far, yeah.
No, not even that far. Or that nice, from my memory. Sorry if you're from
It's quite nice now.
Is it?
I've got an uncle who lives there.
Up and coming. My memories aren't great, and I'll tell you why. And I was saying to her, I said, I really don't think I should go. She'd just sort of come off the life support.
Yeah.
She was just able to communicate. And she was saying to me, no, you should go. And I was saying, I just don't, you know, I'd never done it. I'd never been away.
Yeah.
And it was only to Huntingdon, you know, it wasn't flying abroad. But I just felt really bad about it. And she was I've got really happy memories of her in the bed. Yeah, she couldn't really speak properly, but she was kind of writing things down. She was saying, I really want you to go. I really want you to go. I'll be fine. And then when it came... When it came to the actual moment to say goodbye, and I had to walk home from the hospital back to mine, and it was just after Christmas, and I was feeling quite good because she seemed to be
kind of
getting
turned
better.
A corner.
just when it came to the moment for me to go, she said, "Oh, do you want to stay just a little bit longer?" And I said, if I'm going to go, I've got to go and sort of pack. And she said, "Oh, no, of course." And went away the next morning. And we were staying in this hotel, big group of friends. There was this event on. I can't even remember what it was properly. And I got a phone call from my sister saying, "Mum's taking a bit of a turn." I said, "Oh, do I need to come back?" "I'll come back." "No, no, it's fine. We just wanted to let you know." And then about 2-3 in the morning, my phone rang in the hotel room. And I know I've heard you talk to people about, you know, weird things people say. It was my sister. And she said, "Mum's not alive anymore." Not alive anymore.
I guess she didn't know how to say it.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, just if anyone's listening and wondering how to say it, that's probably not it. there are better ways.
Oh, my God.
I said, "What are you saying? What are you saying?" And she died. Yeah.
So what, she died in the night? Were the other siblings with her? They'd all been there with her.
And
oh, Mark.
There's that thing, isn't there, that people say quite a lot. Sometimes people wait for people to not be there.
Yeah, well, we've said that so many times on the show. Like, I can't... there's so many episodes with someone saying, I was there all the time. And I think now as a parent, that you can understand that.
Of course you can.
You can understand going, "I don't want you to see this. You don't have to deal with this." Like, I totally understand that. And whereas before I had a child, I think I might have been like, "Oh, you know, that doesn't make sense." But now you go, "Yeah, you just want to protect them."
Of course you do.
And she must have, if you'd been caring for her, she must have just wanted so much for you to just have a weekend off and have a nice time. And
I just think she knew that was it.
And then, you know, why sit here and watch me die when you can just, you know, have a break from it all?
It was just that one last moment she said, "Can you stay a few more minutes?" And that stayed with me.
Of course it has. But, you know, you could have stayed a few more minutes and it still could have happened.
Yeah, like, and it would have done, obviously. It's just funny how things stay with you. That's not at all funny, is it?
No, it doesn't always have to be hilarious.
Well, and then I tripped over, fell into a ventilator.
So how old were you then?
So I just turned 20.
You just turned 20. Fucking hell.
And, and then the dark years began.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, you must have just felt like, what the fuck is going on with my world? Like, how do you hit your 20s with... You know, you become an orphan, isn't really the right phrase, but it's the only language we have for it. And all everyone around you is like, "Hey, I'm going to start my life." Like, how did you feel?
I didn't feel an awful lot because I drank a lot.
Oh, really?
And that was very helpful in terms of not feeling things.
It does do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was a mess.
Mm.
I don't think I've ever stopped being, you know, a mess completely.
No, you don't seem like a mess now. That sounds like it would have been a very dark time, really dark time.
I mean, I'm so lucky. I had and have still, you know, almost all of these people in my life, friends who were just amazing. Because my family, like my siblings and I, we've never really got on as a unit. And it's not like it's kind of three against one or whatever, but, you know, they've always been... problems and disagreements, and so we've never been there for each other in that respect. But I've always had so many friends who have been there, and, you know, who are my family, really. And they're people that are still in my life now. They've so many people have seen me through it and helped me through it, you know. And you're right, you're hitting, so you turn 20. Life should be beginning.
Yeah, that's the moment. That's the moment of like, here we go.
I'm an adult. Soar off from the cliff.
Yeah, I can make my choices. I can do what I like. And
so So the other thing that happened, this can sound really sob story-ish, but I couldn't live in the family home.
Of course,
And so I kind of, and because I hadn't been working since I left college, I didn't have a job or anything. So I kind of didn't have any money or a home overnight, sort of.
Wow.
And ended up kind of staying on people's safers and things. And then I had my Anna Cerebilis of cleaning the basement floor of a factory for a year.
Wow.
At 6 in the morning till 5 in the evening. That was an amazing year. And when I look back, actually...
I mean, you choose a job that means you can't think.
Yeah.
You know? You can't sleep. You can't think. It's you're not going to be a normal person in society. You find stuff that's going to
And that's what I did in a big way. And now thinking about Lee and Dean, you know, actually probably some of the characters I met just during that year have sort of made it in.
That makes, having been in the world of Lee and Dean, even before I was in it and I just watched it, I understand those characters a bit more, knowing that that's what you did. It's you have to have gone to the depths of where people are existing, and people are existing there.
And thriving as
having their own little world, but it's an odd world.
It's a strange world if you know, up until that point you've been doing performing arts at college and spending a lot of time in hospitals or boxes or burying skateboards. It's not the natural progression, the path that I was expecting.
So you're working this job for a year.
Yeah, for a year. And then I started doing loads of Amdram. And I met loads of friends through that, and I ended up teaching through that as well.
Did that kind of save you? Did you feel like it gave you a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that how you crawled out of that hole, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think Amdram played a huge part in it, and then I kind of went into teaching sort of by accident through Amdram, and then it's through teaching kind of inadvertently that I met my wife, Jen, and we got together and had our children. And then, you know, we were saying earlier, kind of, you know, you sort of put these things away in a cupboard. One of the things I found, and it sounds like you've found it as well, is that you kind of get to this point of, right, I am a grown-up now. I know I'm 15, but I'm a grown-up, you know, and I'm existing in a grown-up world doing grown-up things. And look, one of these grown-up things is having kids and being a dad. I'm a parent.
Yeah.
I'm an actual parent. And then looking at them and thinking, oh, my, that, you know, I was a kid when I lost my parent, and kind of reliving it.
Yeah. And did you find, because that was the first time I really felt, I had it with it. As I got older, looking at 15-year-olds and understanding what I was.
Yeah.
Because I think when you're still 15, when you're, you know, 30, but you're still 15, you're like, no, I was old. I was a grown-up. I was a mature person. I was actually very mature for my age. And then when you, have a kid and you start looking at children in a completely different way of like, oh, they're tiny. Mm. And then I felt really sad for myself. I felt really like, oh, I was a tiny baby. Why was I trying to act like I was fine? Why didn't I break down in front of everyone and say, this is awful, please help me?
And why do I not forgive myself now?
I know.
For sort of being that way and for still feeling that way at times.
Yeah, I definitely felt like I had to be strong. And I was like, how, again, it's like that acting thing. I was like, how can I make it look like I'm fine? And I would watch people and think, right, that, or I'd say something in a different way and they wouldn't ask another question. I think, oh, they really think I'm fine. That's good. That one worked. Like,
yeah, the mask.
Yeah, just like testing it. And now, you know, you look at 15-year-old and think, it'd be fine for you to go, oh, I'm shit, it's awful. You'd be like, of course you are. Your parents just died. Like, that's awful.
And you're 15.
That's fucking shit.
You don't know
shit.
Who or what you are yet. And you won't for a long time, and maybe you never will.
Yeah. And it's what someone said to me, which I'm still getting my head around, that you have to, when you lose them young, you have to keep grieving them because you change. So you have to grieve them as a 25-year-old. You have to grieve them as a 30-year-old. You have to grieve them as a parent. Like, because your relationship with them is changing. So most people who, you know, their parents are still alive, they'd be like, oh, you know, my relationship with my dad's really changed and I see him now as this person. Mm. Whereas we're having to do that and go, I see him now as this person and he's still dead.
Yeah.
And so I can't talk to him about what that means. And I then have to process that slightly. And I think, I don't want it to sound like, oh, you grieve forever, but it just sort of has to adapt and you have to still reprocess it, which I think makes sense. It
makes total sense. They exist, don't they? It's that relationship in your head.
Yeah.
Do you, because I quite often hear my dad's voice in me when I'm talking to my kids.
Yeah.
So when I'm kind of shouting up the stairs, I'll suddenly kind of be taken aback by almost the echo of my dad.
I don't, but my brother does. So he does. He listens now. He's only just started listening. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Because, I guess because of the sound of my voice, but when he says stuff, because it's a man's voice, I am like frozen. I was with him at Christmas and he said a phrase, which I don't think he realised was like a dad phrase. Like, come on, Chillywinks, in you get.
Oh.
And I was like, I was suddenly like 6 years old and I was like, oh my God. Like, yeah, the tone of that voice is is scary.
And I definitely see and hear my dad in my son.
Oh, Oscar. Wow. Yeah, yeah.
And one of, and Jen says it's going to get me beaten up at some point, but one thing that I think I've inherited from my dad is I can't stand kind of any sort of injustice.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
If I see something happening in the street, you know, I will kind of
get involved.
Get involved, yeah. Even though, you know, they will pulverize me. But I do. And my son has got that as well.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I know it's just, like, it's quite a, not like a rare trait for a human being to
have.
No,
it is. Most people will be like, I'm all right, you guys sort it out.
But he does stand up for things and people, and he hates injustice. I mean, he hates injustice to the point that, at one point last year, he did scream at us. And word for word, he screamed, "Nobody in this house respects my Lego."
I mean, he's probably right, right? You don't respect it in the way that he feels it should be respected, perhaps.
I just don't feel I have the connection with it that he has.
That's,
you know?
That's
it's
fair
difficult.
Enough.
It's difficult.
Yeah, my brother has two sons, and the oldest one really weirdly, I might have said this before, he's half Japanese and he weirdly looks like my dad. That's weird when you're like, it's like a Japanese version of my dad. I think it's because my dad had brown eyes and no one, like my mum, my brother, we don't. So there's like, you don't sort of see that instantly, but my nephew has brown eyes and dark hair, like exactly like my dad. My dad did not look Japanese, he was a dark Welshman. So it's a very strange thing to like look at this like, you know, British Japanese child and be like, wow, that's the Japanese version of my dad.
Nice little echoes of them.
Yeah, definitely. Continuing. Yeah, massive echoes, massive. And I find that really comforting when you see it
in
the kids. Yeah,
I do.
Because it's something about not being... It's just a nice, it's the soft side of it, isn't it, of all the grief. Of like, oh, yeah, they were nice. They were like a lovely parent. And here it is reflected in that situation. Yeah. Did you go to counselling at all? Or did you just AmDram counselling?
No, I did. I did all the, well, after the clock radio incident,
right.
I decided perhaps I should talk to someone. And I went to this weird, I've done all the counselling.
Oh, really?
I've done the therapies. Yeah. Because I don't really trust people who don't do therapy.
I do think everyone would benefit from it. Like, even if you're not in the trauma club, I'd be like, there's stuff you could just
Everyone's
learn about yourself.
Got stuff to talk
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and the first lot of counselling I went to, it had a name that I can't remember, but the thing that was weird about it was, and it's totally played into my need for an audience, is that it was me and the counsellor kind of sitting opposite each other.
Yeah.
And we would have the session. And at the other end of the room would be three or four other counsellors.
No.
Just sitting and listening.
Observing.
And about two or three times during the session, my counsellor would go, okay, let's pause there. And she'd turn to them and they would talk about what they'd just heard as if we weren't there.
What? That's so weird.
Yeah, it sounds weird, but it was great.
Were they on training or was it? No, the counselling was like you have other counsellors.
It was like a special
it was like
form
a
of.
Podcast documentary about counselling happening live.
With no audience or recording equipment.
Wow.
It sounds really odd, but it was sort of lovely because you would say, you'd get the thing of being able to talk about what you want to talk about and having that person sort of challenge you or, kind of draw different things out or ask you to say more about this. And then you'd just get these other people's reflections on what they've just heard, you know.
That sounds so intense.
It was, but it was, even though originally when I walked in the room, I thought, you know, there were hidden cameras somewhere. Oh, yeah, this is your counselling, Mark.
Sure, babes, just sign this form here. Just got to put a little bit of makeup on before you go in, reason.
Is that the late Jeremy Beadle?
Oh, my God.
But it was really good. Yeah, really, really good.
Are you still having it? Or are you having a break?
I'm having a break at the moment because when I'm sort of fine when I'm really busy. But if you find that.
Oh, well, that's why my life is so fucking
so busy.
Yeah, my...
Don't stop, don't think.
My therapist has been talking to me about that as well. Why do you need to fill your life with so many things? It's like, so I don't think about the things.
Yeah.
So I think that I know a lot of people and performers who definitely are addicted to being busy.
Yeah.
So we've given up smoking, we've given up drinking, and now it's like, look how busy I am. I feel so good. I'm so busy. I don't have to think about anything. I'm so tired all the time. No one can speak to me. No one can ever really ask me a proper question.
Yes, I'm stressed.
Yeah, I'm stressed.
You'd
I'm
be
so stressed,
stressed if you were this busy.
Yeah, it's so stressful. And then, like, my therapist is always like, well, you know, why did you say yes to those things? Did you enjoy the... Or it's like, no, I didn't enjoy any of them. Or like, they were all very annoying and I didn't really need to do them.
I'll tell you what I wasn't doing.
I wasn't thinking.
There was no dwelling.
There's no dwelling, mate. So who's the loser now?
Yeah, sussed. Yeah.
So how do you feel with the success of Lee and Dean? Is that a bit hard sometimes?
Yeah.
Yeah, that they didn't see it.
I wish I could share it with them.
It sounds like your dad especially would have enjoyed that sense of humour.
I think so, yeah. And he was always very... Because I'd started doing drama at school and things before he died.
Yeah.
And was really into it. And he was really very supportive. So I think he'd have liked it.
Yeah.
A lot. I'm sure my mum would as well. You know, even though I kind of lived with mum for another 4.5 years, my memories of her are much hazier.
Wow.
Than my memories of my dad. Mm. So whenever I'm talking about them, I tend to sort of talk more about dad just because he's more real.
Yeah, yeah.
In my mind, you know, mum kind of feels just fuzzier, just not quite tangible.
But I wonder if that's the shock of the first grief, because that was the first one. It's all frozen there. And then after that, because some people, you know, after one parent dies would go, oh, I don't really remember the next 4 years. Yeah. You then have to also process the other parent dying. That's
a lot. It's probably no surprise, is it? But I do. One of the things that makes me most sad is not being able to introduce them to the kids and to Jen.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? All this work you're doing, one is doing the drive for all this stuff. And actually, that's not the bit you really care about. No. Is being able to go, oh, look, I made a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really odd. Do you talk about it with your kids?
Yeah, I do. And they show a passing interest.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
You know, as much as, you know, because it's not Fortnite on the Xbox, you know. So, no, they're lovely about it. And they do like to talk about them. And I show them pictures all the time and talk about different things that we did. I think you know, for them, they didn't lose them.
Yeah,
they've just
never
been there.
You know,
they don't have that. And I feel like they are kind of there in the background in their lives.
Yeah.
You know, they're aware of sort of who they've come from, where they've come from. And also we've made sure that they've got their names in their middle names, so that they're saddled with them forever.
Oh, that's nice. You know?
Even though it means my son's got about 18 middle names. He's named after a lot of dead relatives on both sides.
No probs.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. And I will pay for your therapist when that comes up.
And indeed, any lettering on any official stationery or, I don't know.
I know.
You wouldn't have official stationery made.
No, but the forms you have to fill in. Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming to talk to me about John and Anne.
Thank you.
You can follow Mark on Twitter at I'm Mark O'Sullivan, and you can watch the first series of Lee and Dean online on the All Four website, and the second series is due to come out very soon. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, or you can email thegriefcast@gmail.com. Music was provided by The Glue Ensemble, and the show was edited by Kate Holland with thanks to Whistledown Studios. And remember, you are not alone.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.